We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello again, everyone. I've got a couple exciting announcements to make before we get to this week's interview with the always entertaining GM Pontus Carlson. Number one, Perpetual Chess t-shirts and hoodies are finally here. So if you're interested, you can go to the Perpetual Chess webpage. I'll link to it in the show notes, but these are only going to be available for a couple weeks. You'll get them in time for the holiday season. Purchasing a t-shirt or a hoodie is another way to promote and support the podcast. A portion of the proceeds will also go to the charity initiative that GM Pontus Carlson discussed, called Business Meets Chess and Kids. I think it's a great endeavor, and I think it's really important to support chess at the grassroots, non-elite level. So I'm happy to help out a little bit. Announcement number two is there's no episode next week. It's a holiday week here in the United States, and I'm just not going to be home enough to make it happen. The good news is, if you happen to be listening to this Tuesday as it comes out, we have bonus World Championship episode coming. Just a quick hitter about what it's like to be there. So check for that later Tuesday, probably, or possibly Wednesday. Announcement number three, if you heard last week that I launched another project where I'm able to share the library of old interviews that recent Perpetual Chess guest and National Master and bookseller Fred Wilson did with a lot of chess luminaries. These interviews took place in the early 2000s. And for people who support me on Patreon, $3.50 per month, you'll be able to access these interviews. The only thing is, I wanted to issue one correction. Last week, I mentioned Nakamura as one of the interviews that's featured. That was my mistake. Nakamura is not one of the interviews, but a couple of the people you can hear are legendary trainer, who you've heard mentioned if you listen to this podcast a lot. I am Mark Dvoretsky, who's no longer with us. GM Arthur Bisguire, who's no longer with us. And some of the more popular Perpetual Chess guests from earlier days, like GM Andy Soltis, Lev Albert, also legendary trainer Kovalik. There's lots more. So if you're interested, you can check it out. The other thing is, since next week there will not be a Perpetual Chess episode, I'm going to drop one of those in the feed next week. So you can check it out for yourself and see if you enjoy it and see if it's something you want to hear more of. So that's it for my babble. It's time to move on to Pontus Carlson. So sit back and enjoy the interview. And if you're hearing this, you know, close to real time, I hope you're enjoying the World Championship as much as I am. All right. Take care, everyone. Yeah. Hello, everyone. I'm Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. On Perpetual Chess, I have weekly conversations with the chess world's best players, promoters, and educators about their lives, careers, current projects, and best practices. Perpetual Chess is brought to you through the generosity of its Patreon and PayPal supporters. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. Hey everyone, welcome back to Perpetual Chess. We have another great return guest this time, one of my personal favorites. He was quite entertaining the first time, so I'm expecting nothing less this time. Finally, recovering from some health issues and sitting back, and the World Championship is going, but we're going to power through and record this interview. Pontus Carlson, thank you for rejoining us here on Perpetual Chess.
Thanks for having me.
And that's Grandmaster Pontus Carlson, of course. Pontus, we've got a lot to talk about, of course. As we sit here, Game 8 is off and running, and we were just talking about it a little bit before we started recording. But we don't, you know, there's plenty of play-by-play that a lot of our listeners would already be watching. So we don't need to go too deep into what's happening this moment, and we will get to a little bit about the World Championship, some of the broader themes. But first, I wanted to talk about your recent trip to the U.S., because that was the impetus for me circling back and asking and seeing if you wanted to come back on. You did. You're involved in this new nonprofit venture called Business Meets Chess and Kids in New Orleans. So I wanted you to just tell our listeners about the trip and tell us about the venture and anything else that's new in your life.
Yeah. Basically, this is an extremely interesting project that I'm doing in different countries. And it's called Business Meet Chess and Kids in the U.S. And it's basically that I join business guys together with kids, and then they play chess together. So people, we create meetings through chess. So we use chess as a form of integration tool. And this, I'm doing it in Kenya, I'm doing it in Sweden, you know, and we'll do it in England, start in Spain, Norway, some different countries all over the world, you can say. And now I'm going basically big into US, because you have so many countries in one. Yeah. It's like when you see this big map, you're like, okay, where to start?
Yeah.
It's just, you have so many places.
Well, New Orleans is one of my favorite cities here in the U.S. and obviously has pretty stark inequality. So I don't think you could have made a much better choice. And of course, a rich chess history, being the birthplace of Paul Morphy. So
yeah, exactly. That was, of course, one of the reasons, because there you have the chess culture there already. Paul Morphy was born there and everything. I went actually to his house, and also he has his streets. Mm-hmm. And what was quite funny for me was that his house is in like some exclusive area, but his street is like in the hood.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, in New Orleans, the hood is always nearby.
Yeah. So it was quite funny, actually. We went there and so I saw both. I think that it's a good place. It's an excellent place. And we went to, because the chess interest there is massive. You have a lot of people that want to play and knows how to play. So it's a perfect place to do the project. And we are looking for more participants, of course. So we are looking for, what we do is basically that we take youth from inner city communities and rough neighborhoods, and then we pair them up with business guys from all kinds of companies, all kinds of professions, and then they play tandem chess together. So you play together in teams of two in that composition against other teams with the same composition, and then you alternate the moves, and you are not allowed to discuss inside the team. So it's you really need to understand the other one. And it's basically cooperate with them and understand what they're trying to do. So it's not easy at all.
Yeah. And tandem chess generally, it's like a good sort of icebreaker activity, even though ironically you can't talk to your teammate. Somehow it builds camaraderie. The act of playing with both your teammate and the team you're playing against, there's just something casual and fun about it that
Yeah, exactly. It's very easy. It's a very easy way of playing, because the thing is that people don't feel because when you gather all these people, then tons of them don't play in a chess club. But they like to have a game, you know, a casual game, or they play maybe online on some app, usually chess.com, which is an excellent app, by the way. And then they can be, you know, even if they are like, you know, head of the city or the mayor or whatever, this chess still makes them nervous. Chess in front of public still makes them nervous. So therefore, it's much easier for them to come and play when they are playing together with a kid.
Yeah.
Because then there is less pressure on them, basically, you know, and they feel this pressure. So it's easier actually to get it in this format, and everyone understands the cause. You know, the idea is not to attract people that are good in chess, you know, strong players and so on. You know, the idea is basically that everyone can play.
Yeah.
That you create meetings through the help of chess. So that's what we're trying to do.
Good grassroots initiative for chess, but more importantly, I mean, it can be a positive influence on these kids' lives, which I know is the primary goal. So how did this project come into existence, Pontus?
Well, basically, we invented it in Sweden, you know, like almost 5 years ago now. And I've been doing it in Stockholm for, almost 5 years, and the capital of Sweden. And then it's also been transferred to other cities in Sweden. And it has been working very, very well. So basically what happens is that it creates relationships between people that usually don't even meet. And they might even have prejudices about each other and so on. But this actually helps them to get rid of those and to at least challenge them. Therefore, it has been leading to the youth and other family members. They have been getting offered jobs, and they have been getting jobs because of the project. And between the business guys, it becomes like a network, you know. So basically, those guys, they are networking through the project. So and that has led to tons of business being done.
That's which awesome.
It's a very, very easy concept and very, very nice concept, actually, because everyone wins. So and also one other thing is that a lot of people have got help with the curriculum, because maybe they're not so advanced in writing a curriculum, because they haven't done it before, and no one has ever told them how to do it. And then usually the business guys, they know it perfectly well. So then they can help out with this. And the same as being reference persons, you know, for when they are applying for school or some school election or whatever it is, the business guys can help them with that. And what has also been interesting has been that some of the business guys, they have got new business ideas by meeting all these people from the hood, from the suburbs or inner city communities, as you say. And this is quite interesting also, because the name has to be different in all countries, because the suburb means something totally different.
Right, yeah.
In the Nordic countries compared to what it means over there, you know, or in England. So it's always, you always have to do something with the name.
Huh. And so you've had this idea for 5 years, you launched it in Stockholm. How did you end up reaching out to New Orleans, and generally, how do you establish a new initiative in a new place?
Well, basically, I have my agent in the United States, Taurus Bailey, who is a lawyer also in Memphis, and he goes now and then to New Orleans, and I think it's not only because of the jazz. I think it's, even if it's extremely good over there,
which it is,
But I think he goes also for work-related reasons, and therefore he got to know some guys over there, Ken Mask, there was a dialogue with Ken and so on, and then we just decided to do it, you know. So Ken got hold of the idea and he loved it. So and then because what you always need is that you need some local guys, mm-hmm, that are able to do the groundwork basically when I'm not around.
Right.
Because it's since it's so many different places, I cannot be around all the time. So therefore, it's very important to have these local chess coaches that are teaching the students, because you can never forget those guys. They are very important because they are actually the ones who are improving the chess level in the cities, because they teach all these kids how to improve their game. And we have an excellent coach there in New Orleans, Kendrick Perkins from Strategies Force, that has been doing a great job, and he's really good with kids.
Not the NBA player, not the basketball player.
No. But okay. We have some celebrities also inside there. We have Wendell Pierce, for example.
Yeah, from The Wire.
Yeah. So he's involved.
Did you get a chance to meet him?
Not this time, because he was actually in London when I was there. So we missed each other. But I will definitely meet him next time I'm coming. And he's very passionate. I also have Wynton Marsalis, the jazz player.
Wow, big time.
Yeah, he's also very passionate about chess. And you have one of the best doctors over there, Greg Ward, who is actually a big sponsor also of the project. And he is extremely passionate also. And then you have Monty Ross also, the director. He's been working a lot with Spike Lee. They are actually also doing a movie, The Opera Game.
Yeah.
About Paul Morphy's life. That movie is coming out, I think, next year in 2019. So it's going to be, I think it will be on Netflix and everything.
Oh, cool. That's exciting. So,
Yeah, it's going to be a quite interesting movie to watch, and I saw the trailer, so I think it looks good, so I'm looking forward to it, you know.
Nice, and it looked like they were keeping you pretty busy there in New Orleans. I saw you crushed a few newscasters in chess.
It was great fun, actually. Yeah. I was playing with LBJ from this show, News with a Twist. I had some help of Tamika, his co-host, and she actually didn't know chess at all before, more or less. You know, she knew a little bit, but I had to teach her basically during the show, and then we played against LBJ together. So to illustrate the concept, and it was nice. And then I went to all these kind of shows. We did quite a lot of media over there also. But it's important also to be able to reach out so people can see the project. We also visited all the city councilor and the mayor and so on. So it's also important things too, so people know what's going on.
Cool. And you went to a prison too, right?
Yes. We played with, I played some games with some interns. And one of them was really good, actually. He was really good, I have to say, because he was not like these classical players when you see that they haven't never studied. Yes, learn by playing. And so his opening play was not very good. But I would say that the game was equal up to move 20, which is quite an achievement, actually. I think it was a good player, actually. And this is a typical thing also with some training. I mean, he could even challenge for state championship after a while. Because I mean, it's not the strongest state, you know. I mean, it's not that they are weak or something like this, but it's not, they don't have grandmasters,
right? Basically.
So I would say that with some training, this guy could easily get to a level of 2100, you know. And that's what you need in that state to be able to win the championship. Because I played an exhibition game against, exhibition similar actually, against the two of the state champions, Nick Mata. I think they're both of them, they're natural masters, Rene Williams and Nick Mata. So I played them in blitz, a blitz symbol. So basically we had 3 minutes plus some additional seconds. think we played 3+2. And I think I won both games quite convincingly, or all four games because we played two rounds. So I wasn't, I think they both of them, they're quite good players, but it's not untouchable, you know, for that guy that I played in the prison.
That would be an awesome story. We got to figure out how to get him some resources.
Yeah, no, this is the only thing because, I mean, these guys, they of course, they have done something bad or they're in there for some reason, you know. I think also that a bit of problem is that some people are also convicted on some doubtful grounds, you know.
Right.
So I don't think it's all people are there for fair reasons. But if they're in there, no matter how they got there, I think that chess could be an excellent way for them to get out, you know, to do something serious.
Yeah.
Something good, you know. Because, I mean, let's say that these guys, you know, because they were investing also some time now. He told me that he wanted to study Sicilian and so on, you know. So we are going to figure out how we can get some books in there.
Cool. Well, yeah, I mean, if you figure it out, let me know. I'd be happy to send some, and our listeners might be interested too, so.
Yeah, if there's some people out there that are happy to donate for these kind of things, we would love to receive that, and so we can transfer it to the guys in prison, because I think that's an excellent way to get back into society, you know, and then do something serious, because they have so much time, you know, and of course, if you don't know, have anything good to do with the time, it's going to be bad for you, and for everyone else.
Yeah.
But if they focus their time on chess, I cannot see how it can be bad.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, and last question on this initiative, at least for now, is so what's your very next step? Are you going to another city, or is something else happening in New Orleans, or what's what else is cooking?
In spring, I'm going to be back in New Orleans. Because then we're going to set up the event and with the tournament, basically. The tandem chess tournament. So now we are basically raising the funds, and we are raising also participants. So we are looking for all kinds of companies and business guys that would love to take part. So please just enter the website is easiest, and it's business meets chess and kids. .com.
Okay.
And it's just to enter there, you know, and then you find all the contact details and all information of how it works and so on. So we are looking for people to join it. And then we next step is to enter more cities. I on my last trip to US, I actually passed by New York also.
Right, you went to the Marshall.
Yeah, legendary chess club and really nice place. I like it. I've been there before actually. Also, but last time was in 2016. And so next step is, of course, to enter the new cities. And I mean, New York is an excellent city to enter with this, because it's really needed there also.
Yeah, in New York, it's just got such a strong chess culture that I'm sure there's people who can help you out there.
Yeah, and there's so many companies also.
Right.
So you have tons of people that are tons of companies, you know, that could also... Because the companies and the business guys, they also have these big networking benefits. And it also, it teaches them strategy, you know, because I've been using so much of these chess rules and all this chess thinking that I have learned through the years in my business life also, because it's not a very well-covered topic and area, but I think it's an extremely important area. This with all this business knowledge that you can actually extract from chess. So how you could, I have a talk that I'm doing in some top business schools and some companies also when they invite me, and these Rotary associations and on how chess thinking can actually revitalize their business. And you have things like, for example, we have this rule that you know very well, that a threat is always stronger than its execution.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the same in the corporate world. Because, for example, let's take this example with court, you know. I mean, no, if you threaten another company, to go to court. Let's say you have a slightly bigger company that threatens a smaller company to go to court. Then actually to go to court is not that nice for the bigger company either, because you have to pay a lot of money and it's still not sure that you will win. Even if you have the better lawyer or whatever, it's still not sure that you will win. And so it takes gives you a lot of anxiety, and it's also, you know, it costs you money no matter how you do it, basically. And so no one wants to go to court, basically. But if you threaten the smaller company with, okay, we are going to court, then of course it's bigger risk for the smaller company. So they and then usually what happens is that they will come and talk to you and ask you for any kind of deal of how basically you can not end up in court, which will of course be very, very beneficial for you. So there you have it again.
Yeah, it's a good example.
The threat is much stronger than execution. And there is tons of this kind of rules that you have in chess that are very interesting to use in corporate also. I mean, you have this thing with also preparation, you know, which is something that chess players always do. You have the how you analyze the data. Like you have big data, you have tons of data that is important, but you have limited amount of time, so you need to quickly just find out, okay, what is important here. And all these kinds of things you are doing as a chess player, and especially as a grandmaster, strong chess player, you do it all the time. So I think that there is a lot of things that chess can actually teach business. And I don't think that this topic has been covered much at all. There's been some books. I know Bob Rice wrote something and so on, but I don't think it has been covered enough at all. So there I have tons of own ideas and own experience from my own both chess career, of course, and business life, and things that has been working very well for me that I'm sharing, actually. With these companies and top business schools and so on, and I will definitely do. I'm gonna do some tours with this. We are setting them up now in US. So this is the same. If there is some listeners out there that has some kind of business and or are in some kind of business school or something like this, and that would like to have me, they can just reach out. And the easiest thing is to just check my website, pontuscarlson.com, because there it's very easy to find the contact details.
Okay, yeah, and I'll link to that as well as the link to the nonprofit itself in the show notes. And yeah, I'm excited to see where this project goes. I mean, it's as you say, it's got so much potential because, you know, the number of places that could benefit from a program like this is basically infinite, so...
Yeah, no. I mean, I think that up to this point, in Kenya is actually the I would say that it has been the most beneficial for the society. I mean, it has been beneficial for society all over, but there, since the contrasts are enormous, you know, I mean, yeah. Between what you can say, like the ones who have some good conditions and yeah, all these people without absolutely anything, you know. But the funny thing is that they are the most happy kids over there by far. They are incredibly positive and happy and so on, but totally without resources, which is quite interesting also. So it says something that I don't know.
Yeah, I found that to be true in Guatemala too. I haven't been to Africa, but just in the amount of traveling I've done worldwide, I mean, there doesn't seem to be a strong correlation between national income level and overall happiness.
No, I think it's probably everything else. They have good weather over there, you know, and in Kenya at least they're also quite religious, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they are probably putting their faith in this also. But in general, I think the attitude in Africa is very positive. You know, I remember when we were there with another project also that was basically sponsored by Paul Allen, that unfortunately died, the Microsoft co-founder. Then there was, we had a police car behind us when we were driving in Zambia, and the driver didn't see that it was a police car that was trying to pass by. And then our driver did some kind of gesture, which was not the best thing to do. That was not a smart move.
Right.
So they came out with, very angry and armed. We were in some trouble, you know.
Jeez.
And the funny thing is that I realized, like, whoa, this is really bad. and then the driver said with, a happy voice, like, we are in trouble, but with a smile, you know. I was like, this is bad. And they were, yeah, it's very bad, but with a total smile all the time. You know?
That's great.
And it's like typical African style, you know. It's right. Like you realize you are in serious trouble, but still with a smile, you know.
And you lived to tell the story, so I guess it didn't turn out too badly.
Yeah, no. The lucky thing was that the driver was a female.
Mm-hmm.
I think that really helped us.
Yeah.
Otherwise, if I was driving the car or something else, it would have been bad. I tell you, they were really angry. But since they have respect for females, you know, we actually got some hard words on us and a big warning.
Not so bad.
Yeah, no, it was very good. You know, I mean, it's you have seen much worse that can happen. I have actually. There is one Swedish basketball pro that plays in women NBA that I know. And she usually, when she drives in the States, she keeps her ID like a taxi driver. So she puts it on at the front window. Yes, because she's so afraid of being stopped. And that something bad will happen when she reaches out for her identification.
Yeah.
So there has been some horrific examples of that. So I think that a lot of bad things can happen. But really interesting in New Orleans was that we played with, I played on the same day, I played with a police officer that came by to one of the exhibitions. We went to the French market and played some chess, tandem chess with all kinds of people. And later we went to the prison to play. And what we were thinking about to arrange also is to arrange a match between the prisoners in different countries and different prisons, you know, because they can play online.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah. No. So I think the chess has an enormous power, actually.
Does it have to be like a special event for them to be able to play online, or do they generally have access?
That's very different because it depends. I mean, if you have someone who is in for some serious,
right?
The worst case of crime. I mean, maybe you shouldn't. But the funny thing is that I think that no matter how bad their crime was, you know, or whatever, how aggressive or mentally sick they are, the funny thing that my experience is when they sit down and play a game of chess, they are totally quiet.
Yeah.
And no one is aggressive. It's quite interesting. I think chess is just too fascinating. So people, no matter if you are aggressive or whatever, you just forget it when you are playing. And you can see the same with these hyperactive kids when they are playing. Their parents always come and say that, okay, listen, this is David, he's hyperactive and it's probably going to be a problem and you will try this and so on. But it's never any problem. Because they get totally fascinated by chess.
Yeah.
So I think there is a massive power in chess, you know, that could be used even more.
Well, and luckily you're on the case, so.
Yeah, I'm on the case. But, I mean, there's, what is it, like 600 million chess players all over that are known to the world. And I think that there's tons of unknown player online.
Yeah.
So I think that more people... should be able to do good things for chess and I mean more people, a lot of people are also doing already a lot of good things for chess, but I think it could be even used more, you know, chess for different measures. not only for like competitions and so on. You can go, I mean, you can use it for as a educational tool, which is quite popular in the States. I mean, chess in schools is booming.
Yeah.
And you have what I'm doing, for example, when you use it as an integration tool. And I think it's also a great thing. And this corporate strategy that I'm also doing there, I think is very interesting. And I'm really looking forward to this tour in the States, because it's also interesting for me, because, you know, the business style is also very different, you know. In US, it's a lot of win-lose business, you know, which is not my style at all. Because in the Nordic countries, it's win-win, you know. That's the kind of deals that you're making. Win-lose is so brutal, you know. And yeah. I think it's unnecessary, but it's...
Well, the US, they would say it's win-win. It's just, really, it would be win-lose.
Yeah, exactly. You pretend it's win-win, but then right. when you look at the conditions, it's win-lose, you know.
Yeah.
So I think it's quite interesting to see like the different styles that you have all over in the world, you know. Some countries is like totally different than other countries, but I think the general advice there is to always learn the culture. I think that's the most important. You know, if you are able to penetrate the culture, and of course, if you learn the language, it helps always. And it's easier with US because it's English, you know, usually or Spanish, you know. So it's of course easier to do it there. But if you're doing it China or wherever you are, you know, it's the best is to learn the language and to penetrate the culture, because that's something you need to be able to do good business, you know. If you don't know the culture, I mean, you will always be punished. It's like there's tons of these American companies. Sorry if I'm insulting someone.
We deserve it.
Because there's something very good in US when it comes to sport, and that's the general self-confidence that you have in US, which is excellent. You know, I mean, like, for example, when I entered New Orleans, there was one guy and that me and Cam bumped into. And he said that, okay, yeah. You're the chess grandmaster. I said, yes. And he said, like, okay, I don't play, but if I would play, I would beat you.
Right.
And he's like, you know, this, you always get this like trash talking, you know, directly when you enter the country, you get the trash talk, you know. No, I'm going to beat you. I'm going to take you down. It's like, you know, I hardly entered the city before I got it, you know.
Right.
At the airport, I got it directly, you know. That's how it is, you know. It's like, and that's self-confidence.
And not so much of that in Africa, I guess?
Yeah, in Africa is also. You also have the same, actually.
Interesting.
There you also can get it. But they have a bit more respect, I would say. But still, they want to take the challenge, you know. Because they're living on the hope, you know, so they want to take the challenge. But in US, it's more trash talk. It's like, I'm going to beat you. I'm going to take you down. and they really believe in it, which is the difference. Because in Europe, you know, you don't get much challenges. Because if you get a challenge, then of course, it will be Magnus or someone that is
right. Stopped. Yeah, plus, I mean, all the European grandmasters I've talked to, I mean, I can't think of many exceptions. They're all very modest.
Yeah, because this is different style, you know. It's like the only challenge you will get is somewhere stronger, probably. Yeah?
Right.
So it's not really, it's not the same. It's just totally different, you know. And this thing, for example, with this kind of self-confidence, it's very good for sport, but it can be a bit worse sometimes when you are doing business, you know. Like, for example, the American companies, they're very good in making these culture errors, you know, that they just enter and do everything the same way as they do in US, and then it collapses, you know, because it doesn't work, because they're in a new country, so the culture is different, you know. And very funny, for example, was when I was living in China, and then there was Nike was entering, and they did some commercial. Because their idea, NBA and basketball is very popular in China. And then they wanted to create basically a commercial with something Chinese. So, and Lee Brown James, of course, because he's the big guy in basketball. And what they did then was that they created this commercial where they played heads up, Lee Brown James and the Dragon. But they didn't do any proper research. So basically, they didn't understand that the Dragon is a symbol of the Chinese government. What happened then was that they played heads up. And in the end, LeBron James slam dunked over the Dragon, and the Dragon died. And they were going to broadcast this in national Chinese. I mean, that's not a very good
way. Yeah, the government, I'm sure, didn't take too kindly to that.
They didn't like it, and they had to pay some unknown amount of a massive fine, you know. And it was unknown amount. No one knows how much it was, and basically, of course, they had to withdraw the commercial
direct. Right.
Otherwise, they would be kicked out from the country, basically. So, and that there's tons of this kind of, you know, mistakes that has been done. Walmart has done quite a lot of mistakes in different countries and so on. So I think that sometimes the American companies, they don't really do the preparation. I mean, they don't, if you think like a chess player, they don't prepare.
Yeah.
And I think you need to prepare there. I mean, you just hire a couple of Chinese, real Chinese consultants, you know, so that you know what's going on. Because if they just did this and listened to them, then they would never make this mistake. And then I remember there was also some second things that when they hired some Hong Kong Chinese, you know, to be CEOs and so on. But it's different because Hong Kong Chinese and Chinese is not the same. There is also different culture, you know. So they had the same problems with culture, some culture shocks and so on. So it doesn't just mean that you know the culture just because you speak the language. So it's, and I think that their American companies have things to learn, you know, to basically prepare better. And not just think that they know everything and just enter, because when it's new market, new country, you have to show some respect for that. And how do they do it in that country? And it's the same when we're entering, you know, with this project. You can't do it in the same way in every country. It doesn't work like that, because it will never work if you just have the same formula and just do it exactly the same. Never. Because when you do it in Kenya, for example, it's not the same as when you do it in Sweden. Totally different culture.
Yeah.
And you can see that, for example, in Kenya, they are much more religious, you know, much more religious than in Sweden, for example. So therefore, you need to basically engage all these pastors, you know, and the churches behind it, because otherwise you will get nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something totally different. I don't think we have hardly anyone that is religious. We have some people that are religious, of course, playing in Sweden, but it's not the majority, you know. So it's just totally different, and quite interesting actually. To do it, and since I've been around globally both chess and business for many years, you know, I have picked up quite a lot of things. So I think it's very interesting, you know. I enjoy this, you know.
Yeah.
And to also learn new things.
Yeah, well, as this continues to expand, I'll look forward to hearing more about it, more about the differences that you uncover, although I'm sure you already have some ideas.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, at some point I'm going to write a book. I think it's not that far away, actually, that I will write a book about this chess connection to business. I think it's extremely interesting.
Cool.
And I think I have quite a lot of things to say there also.
Excellent. Well, we'll look forward to that and look forward to what happens with this project. But I want to talk about chess playing. So, Pontus, I recently tried to play a tournament. I don't play that often. And every once in a while, I try to dust off the cobwebs and, you know, make a little comeback. And this last one that I tried didn't go too well. And I was checking out to see if you'd played it all. And I saw that you played in September. And it looked like for someone who's very busy and not super active, it looked like your results were pretty good. So I thought maybe you could give me and our listeners some advice on how to not embarrass yourself if you're only playing, say, once every, you know, 6 months or something like that.
Well, that's a difficult question, how to not embarrass yourself, because I think it depends on your expectations. But I think, of course, you know, you have to be a bit smart. If you know that you are not training the most, then let's say that you are going to play someone, and you have two openings. You can play the Taimanov, and you can play the Neidorf, you know. And you play them equally well, more or less. If you have, you know, if you're up against some active player, then be a bit smart, you know, choose the Taimanov. Because if you go for the Neidorf, you know, they have been studying, you know, all the time, and you haven't looked at that variation for 5 years. Of course, it's not very wise to go there, you know.
Yeah.
And this is what I'm trying to do, you know. And I played in Riga. That was probably the tournament you saw, and I did good until last round, where actually I thought I was going for some complications, which was of course totally stupid, because exactly that happened.
Right.
I went for the dragon in the last round, and it was a total failure. Cause up to that point, I played according to my plan, but then I thought, okay, I will surprise a bit and play an aggressive game, because usually last round you like to have some complicated games where things are going, can go either anyway, because it's usually about if you win last round, the tournament is usually a success. If you don't, it's always a failure,
right?
So that's usually when you decide where you're gonna end up in the table. And I had a good position before the last round. I was chair second, but then I lost in last round, of course. And then you end up in place 18 or whatever, you know.
Yeah, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
Yeah. No, it's always. I mean, when you lose, there is no round left to recover. But I think that in general, you have to be a bit smart, you know, when you don't train so much, and if you have like family and small kids and so on, you know, I mean, you have to be a bit wise, you know. Because it's not always the important thing when you train chess is that it's not about how much you train, you know. The important thing, like I said last time when I was on your show, is that you are doing the right things. And that's something that I think mentally can help a lot of players. But the best thing is basically to if people can afford it, is to have a coach. Because there's tons of IMs and GMs and even FMs, you know, that can explain chess very well and can help them out, you know. So instead of that, they are going to try to find all this knowledge by themselves, because there's endless of information right now. It's just impossible for a club player to navigate. And then it's much better to take some classes. And where you have someone that teaches what you need to know, and that has also been doing all this work before.
Yeah,
because I mean, the grandmasters they are doing it all the time. So I think that it's. But also one thing that is good when you don't play this often is that you are usually very eager to play.
Yeah, that's true.
And that I think that's something that you can also use a lot. But I think that it's important also to take one game per time, you know, so that you don't look at the whole tournament directly, that you basically just look at one game per time, so that you focus on the game that you are going to play now.
Mm-hmm.
And I can recommend also one book that I find extremely good.
Great.
Yeah, it's one book made by the guy lives in the United States now, I think. It's a Latin guy. Grandmaster Manuel Flores Rios.
I had a feeling that's where you were going. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been in touch with him. I'm hoping to get him on the podcast soon, because I know several people have recommended his book and I've been checking it out. Yeah. It's very practical and sort of you know, with the exception of the Soltis book on structures, it's unique.
I think that's by far the best book I've seen. And I think there is good books like
Ross. And it's called, just to be clear for listeners, it's called Chess Structures, right?
Yeah, Chess Structures. And okay. I think it's for me, it's the best book I've seen in this area. Because he goes through not all structures, because there's so many structures in chess, but he goes through a lot of them, the main structures. And then basically he goes through the typical plans. And I think that people that reads this book and understands this, because this is the problem, that what I've noticed also through my students is that, you know, if I read this book, I get everything, of course. But if they read it, you know, some of the things, they read the text, they play through the moves, but they don't get it.
So what level would you say can benefit from that book? Like, is there a rating below which people should study something else?
There is different books. You know, I mean, you have there's one book called Chess Structures for Post, or Chess Training is called, for Post Beginners. That is basically a little bit similar to this, but for lower level.
Okay. So what level do you think? Because I'm sure there are people listening.
It's very individual advice. Because I mean, some players, they are very tactical, you know, and they know zero about positional chess. And other players, they have good positional understanding, you know, or at least a positional understanding that is much better than the rating, because they are maybe not good in tactics. So it's not easy to just say that there is a certain level where you can read this, but I think that maybe the book, if you're not very positional, perhaps the book is easier to grasp if you are above 1600 or something.
Okay. That's the Ruiz book, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the other book is for lower rated.
Okay. And the other book, I just looked it up, but it's Yaroslav Surkovsky.
Yeah, Surkovsky, yeah.
That's a fresh recommendation, 101 episodes in, Pontus. So
I think no one has recommended that one before because it's the same but for lower level, you know. So he explains like the basics, the start, you know, like with good placed pieces, you know, you know, how you can basically use open files and you know, outposts. And I mean, all these basic things that you need to know, you know, that the knights, for example, they love outposts. And they need to get good outposts. You know, the bishops, they need to have clear and open diagonals. The rooks, they need open files. And how to use it, you know. All these kind of basic things that you really need to know. So I think that both of them are good books, you know, for different levels. You know, if people are like 1700, 1800, they're trying to improve, then definitely I would go for the chess structures, you know.
Cool.
But that's if you want to be safe, of course you take both, you know, and start with basic one, and then you go for the more advanced one, you know. But I would definitely recommend taking classes, you know, and going through all these kind of things with the coach, you know, because what I've noticed is that when people read it by themselves, they don't really get it at some points. I have one student, a Swedish guy, and that is actually very good. He's just going straight up. And when we started, he had 1400, and now he's, I think, 1800. And I see him as quite a good player, but I realized that the first chapter, he really didn't get it. Mm-hmm. So he only got it when we went through it together. The second time. You know, not first time, second time. And so I think that the book, some of the things are tricky, you know. And this is also something that can be a bit challenging for teachers. That you think that, okay, this guy is smart, you know, his chess skills is not where they should be. If he had been training more, he would be stronger and so on. And you think that, okay, he will get it. But then you realize that he didn't get it so easy. And then you think, so then you realize that, okay, it's probably trickier than I expect these things. Because sometimes it can be that when you're a grandmaster or international master and so on, you just have a good talent for this, you know. You just have a good feeling for the position game or basically to single out what's important in a large amount of data or information. That I think that most GMs and IM can do easily. And these abilities, you can definitely use them in the trade and industry. Definitely. So, cool. And I think it's many players and people haven't been using that so much as they could, I would say. So, but I think that it's to not embarrass yourself. I mean, that's mostly about your own expectations.
What about, how do you, do you have any tricks for limiting blunders and oversights? Like if you're generally playing okay, I mean, if for me, it's like I'm out of form. Generally, the quality of play is okay, but I'm just more likely to just miss something. Like one bad move, basically.
Yeah. No, basically, when I usually nowadays, when I blunder, if I blunder, I blunder because of time trouble or something.
Yeah.
I had one game in Riga there where in last round where I blundered big, but it was then the position was already bad and I had zero time.
Right.
But so I usually don't blunder, you know, like then I lose a piece or something like this. I usually don't do this. But I think that what you can do is that you can, I mean, tactical training. And I think that what you have on chess.com and you have also this chess tempo, I think those applications are very good for tactical training.
Yeah. But for me, it's like, you know, I could see a five move combination, but then I'd miss like one reply to the first move, you know, like.
Yeah. And that's usually also physical stamina, you know. That's,
right.
A lot of chess players don't train anything physically. And to me, it sounds like you're getting a bit tired.
Yeah, could be. Sounds plausible.
And when you get tired, of course, I mean, chess is the same as some physical sport, you know, like soccer. And soccer, I mean, your body gets tired. You know,
yeah.
If you're running a lot, your body will get tired. And chess is the same, but the only difference is that it's the brain.
Yeah.
So basically, if you play a long game, you know, your brain gets tired. And it's quite interesting because we are also organizing in Sweden some big sports camp where basically there's one famous TV presenter and his wife that are gathering 12 different sports together in one big camp. So it's tons of kids all over playing basketball and soccer and whatever. And then all the mentors and leaders and so on are professional players, you know, strong players of highest level, you know. So it's like you have the some NHL players that plays over there in the States they are basically handling the hockey and the hockey guys and the youths coming there. And, you know, during that last time when it was done in August, then there was also some experts, some health experts, some doctors and so on. And we were discussing this, what you should eat during a chess game, because the brain also gets tired, you know. And they basically, their recommendation was only to fill up with sugar, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was what they said, because that's the only thing that actually helps, which is quite interesting. So basically, they were just recommending, you know, just fill up with sugar after a while, because your brain will get tired if you don't get it.
Right. Huh, not what I would have guessed. I would have guessed something healthier, like almonds.
Yeah. But it was their recommendation. So basically, get some Coke or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Get some kind of sugar, you know. After 3 hours, you get tired. Your brain gets tired. Yeah. You don't get the sugar.
Yeah. All right, cool. That's good advice. And hopefully it was useful for people besides myself, because I know that a lot of us are sort of, you know, some listeners are super active, but others just play when they can. And yeah, it presents its own set of challenges.
Yeah, I think you should also not overdo the sugar. So I mean,
yeah, and don't eat it too early, because then you might crash. So
yeah.
If it's going to be a long game, save it for you know, the third hour, fourth hour.
Yeah, no, the third, fourth hour. I mean, I think it's a very good thing actually to do it. You know, because I noticed this. I started to do this also myself, and I noticed that it actually helps. You know.
Yeah, and when they had those like heart rate monitors or whatever, I think it was at Isle of Man on the elite players. I mean, I think they said Hikaru burned like 1,000 calories or something during a game. So, yeah. I mean, you're burning through a lot of energy, so it needs to
really a lot. And I think that's a very, very, very interesting thing with heart rate monitors.
Yeah.
And I think it will be much more developed in chess world very soon, because I think that's the next step, you know. Like, for example, when you have this TV broadcast, it's much more interesting if you can see the heart rate.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
Because then you see that when they make a blunder, you know, the heart rate goes up and so on. It's better TV.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, you really can feel the tension just by seeing it. So just one more topic, Pontus, because the World Championship is ongoing. We're on move 19 now. And as I was telling you before we record, I don't think it will serve much purpose for us to like talk about who's going to win and stuff. But I mean, I do feel like there's some themes emerging that clearly people will be talking about for much time to come, but we can already sort of discuss. And one of them, of course, is the much rumored death of the white pieces, with white struggling to get advantages in these tournaments. Do you think that that's something primarily related to the structure of the match and these individual players, or do you think it's a legitimate trend?
I think that the sample is not big enough for drawing any verdict. I think you probably need to see more matches.
More than 8 games to make that conclusion.
Exactly.
Yeah, that seems valid.
But I think that there is something there, you know. Of course, it's, I mean, when you do a match like this, you know, they analyze all kinds of openings, you know. And the teams that they have behind, they are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's getting more and more and more professional, which means that they will analyze a lot of different possibilities. Luckily in chess, there is, you know, so many possibilities. So it's not going to be that they will solve chess or something like this. But still, they will get very far in many openings and many structures and so on. And it's not that easy to just go into a main line like it used to be like 20 years ago or 15 years ago. That you can just go into a main line, you analyze that properly, and then you will be able to use that, your novelties and whatever, for a couple of times. It doesn't work like this anymore. You know, it's not so easy to find them. Because most of these main lines, people have analyzed them quite deep, and many players knows about the analyses, you know, nowadays. So it's not that easy anymore to just go in there and get in your novelty and so on. So therefore, they go into minor lines and sub lines, and sometimes they just test each other. It's more like if you give some student a homework, you know. And then you test them on their homework. Do you know this line? You know, do you remember the moves?
Yeah.
Like, so this I can see many of the games between top players nowadays. They just test them, each other. But I think that also, if you go to this match, if you're Magnus Carlsen, you know, and before the match, you know that he's more experienced than Fabi. He knows, he has played World Championship matches before. He's won all of them. He knows how to do it. You know, Fabi is his first match. And most importantly, Magnus is so much stronger in rapid chess and blitz than Fabi. So much stronger. So why should he take any risks? This match is up to this point is going, okay, maybe not exactly how he wants it, but he's still happy with this as long as no one wins. Because if no one wins, they're going to go into rapid play. And I mean, Magnus is, what is he, 29 or whatever? And Fabi is like maximum 27. Not even that, I think.
Yeah. Well, but I don't know if you caught Vishy Anand yesterday on the St. Louis chess broadcast. He had a really unique perspective about this that I hadn't heard anyone else say, which was similar to what you were saying about the sample size of the games with white. He was saying that it's true that over a large sample, Magnus is much stronger in rapid and blitz than Fabiano. But being that the playoff is only a small number of games, he was saying that it basically it'll come down to who has better nerves. So it's less important in that sample that Magnus is stronger than just whose nerves are going to hold up. So he was sort of suggesting that people are overestimating Magnus's edge in the rapid and blitz portion because it's such a small number of games.
Well, I mean, of course, it's very hard to sit there and say against Anand.
Against Vishy, yeah.
That has played a couple of more World Championship matches than me.
Yeah, likewise.
So I think it's quite difficult to say something against it because he's been around. So it's an interesting perspective. But since I've played both of them, I really think it's enormous difference between Magnus and Fabi in
okay.
play.
Yeah.
I think that Magnus is much, much better. But of course, if Vishy sets that, it's, you know, there's
We could find some other top 10 player who said the opposite. So it doesn't just have to be debating Vishy. We can.
There is a different tension. You know, I think that's what he's trying to get to. That
when
you do a World Championship match, there's a different tension because also this can be a pressure for Magnus, you know. So it depends on how he can handle it, you know. Because what I've seen from Magnus that I still think is a little bit one of his few weaknesses is basically the mental strength, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That I think that... he gets a bit nervous sometimes, you know, which is not strange because he's a human being, even if it doesn't seem like that some games, but he is, you know, so he gets a bit nervous some games. And I remember, you probably also remember when they had this candidate tournament, when Vlad Kramnik was chasing him and they both lost in the last game.
Yeah, amazing.
And Magnus actually managed to qualify since Kramnik lost.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, that was typical. And also I know that last match, for example, I was talking with Magnus during the match. He was not in very great mental shape after game 8.
Of course. Yeah, it looked bleak.
He was not. He was, I've never seen him, like he was very depressed, you know, very out of everything, you know. And I think that there he has actually room for improving, you know. He could even be mentally stronger there, you know, like Gary, for example. Gary was crazy strong, you know, mentally.
Yeah,
he's really, but they have a little bit different, you know, personality and approach and so on. Yeah, you know? But I think that's something that could actually mix up the match a little bit. That Fabi has absolutely nothing to lose if he gets to a playoff, you know. Because everyone expects him to lose.
Yeah, it's true.
And I expect that he has been training a lot on
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He must have been doing that because otherwise it would be strange because he knows that he can match Magnus in the long games, you know? He knows this. Because Fabi, when he gets to his highest level, everyone knows that he's crazy high.
Yeah.
So everyone knows that he can match Magnus in the long games. But we don't expect him to match him in the rapid play. And therefore, it would be stupid if he didn't train on that.
So
it's just like a team, you know, like England, for example, they were knocked out in every soccer championship on penalties, you know. And before this Swedish coach came in, they didn't even practice penalties. And I find it very stupid because if you know that you have been knocked out for so many championships on this, why don't you just practice on it? Because at least it makes it some percentage better. And I think it's the same here with Fabi. I mean, for sure, he has been playing a lot of blitz. I think he said it, that he's been playing a lot of blitz and rapid games, you know. Because just to get into it, to improve, you know, and feel comfortable. And I think that he will have a good feeling also when he enters this, because like there's nothing to lose, because everyone expects him to lose. And that's also quite actually pleasant thing to enter when everyone expects you to lose, because there's no pressure on him, basically.
Yeah, and in the interviews that Magnus has given, especially, he gave several interviews in the immediate lead up to the match, and his fear of losing was palpable to me in there. I mean, he, to his credit, he's very forthcoming about sort of how he feels, but I mean, it wasn't, he wasn't blustery like Kasparov would be. He wasn't just like overflowing with confidence. He was just saying this is going to be my biggest challenge, basically.
Yeah, no, of course, because I mean, this is tough, you know. I mean, Caruana is 3 points behind him on the rating list, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and many people think that Magnus is big favorite, but I don't really see it that way, you know. I mean, for me, Magnus is slight favorite because he's more experienced, you know, and he's been in this situation before. Fabi has not. So in my and also the rapid play edge, you know, that I see Magnus as favorite, but I don't see him as a big favorite, you know.
Yeah.
Because if Fabi wins one game, he's world number one.
Yeah. And you mentioned you were in touch with him, Magnus, during the last match. Have you been in touch at all during this one? Or?
Well, not during the match, but before, yes.
Okay.
And so on. But he's, I mean, he's a little bit older. I think he seems to be in very good balance. Mm-hmm. I talked to him before and so on, and I know also his team and so on, you know, they're like growing and developing and Magnus company, you know, basically with all this Play Magnus app and everything.
Yeah,
I think they are probably the ones who are improving the most. It's just,
yeah,
they're taking massive steps all the time, and it's a very, very professional, nice organization.
Yeah,
and that's Simon Agdestein's brother, Espen Agdestein, is a major part there, and his agent, and doing those guys, they're doing a great job, actually, and the organization is growing all the time. So, and I think that's something very good for chess, that someone creates a totally professional company, and I think that their feeder has a lot to do there with brand, you know, chess.
Yeah.
I don't think it's properly done. You know, there's so many chess players. I mean, look at the interest. People are following this match all over the world. But, I mean, how much is the brand visible?
Yeah, chess.com was the most popular, most viewed thing on Twitch the other day for the first time. That's amazing. Yeah. Like 50,000 viewers or something.
Yeah, but the interest is enormous. No, but I don't think that I don't think it's that we.
And they're not even, and all the games are draws.
Yeah, exactly.
Which I mean, you and I know, like, that doesn't mean it's boring, but to the more casual observer, that they're still without decisive results, that people are still watching, is a good sign.
Yeah, and you can see that in Norway, for example, where chess is really big nowadays, because of Magnus, of course. But also they have the world junior champion, Arjan Teiri.
Yeah.
So it's not only Magnus, you know.
Yeah.
It's more guys coming. And because of that, you know, they have a massive crowd. There's different TV channels that are broadcasting. And it's funny because, I mean, they are broadcasting like 7-8 hours from this match, you know, daily. And I mean, only draws, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, not one single decisive game, and you still have like 1.5 million people watching it, you know.
Yeah.
And in incredible. A country that has 4 million people, it's amazing. and then it says, oh no, not one single decisive. But the thing with these World Championship matches is that people get the tension, you know.
Yeah.
Because now we are in game 8, you know, it's not many games left. And, you know, even if you don't understand chess, you understand that this is important.
Yeah.
And a loss now, it's very bad. And last time, Magnus lost in this game 8.
Yeah.
And
the tension just keeps mounting.
Yeah, he managed to recover in game 10, but he was in trouble.
Yeah.
And but I think in that match, it was that was only up to himself, you know. The way he lost in game 8, it was totally unnecessary. He has lost because he overpressed. Mm-hmm. And that was why he was so upset, I think, also, because he didn't manage to beat Sergey before, even though he had tons of won positions. And then he overpressed, you know. And then suddenly you are down with one.
Yeah.
A couple of games left to go. It's a very unpleasant feeling. And, of course, you know, the whole Magnus brand, the whole way they have constructed it, it's not very good for him to lose the title.
Of course, yeah.
No, because it's very clear on the world champion, world number one, and so on. And so, I mean, what are you going to brand it with if he loses his title, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the world number two, and...
Yeah, it's just not the same.
He has lost the world champion match, you know, it's not the same selling point, you know? So, of course, he has more to lose. And then Fabi, that is not, that he doesn't have that established brand yet, you know? Even though he's a very, I think Fabi, if we're talking about this with self-confidence, you know, he doesn't appear to be American.
Yeah.
when you meet him, because he's very, very, very humble and very nice.
Yeah, it's
and
true.
It's not like this that I'm going to beat you, but he could say it, you know, but he doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
He should say it because he really can back it up, you know. I think he's very strong, you know. But a different playing style also, which is also interesting, because Fabi is usually more direct than Magnus, you know. Magnus more positional, you know, and squares and excellent understanding. And I think what doesn't come up much is his defense, you know. When you see these matches that he plays against Hikaru on chess.com and so on, they where they play tons of different time controls, like 1 minute and 3 minutes and 5 minutes and so on. I mean, just look at his defense.
Yeah.
And how many times Hikaru is winning. But he can't finish the game. He's not even close to finish the game. And then he gets frustrated and loses.
Right.
I've seen so many games, and you can even see it because Hikaru, he's a little bit like Gary, you know. He has the same language, you know. It's actually, honestly, very annoying to play with Hikaru. Mm-hmm. I don't know if many players, okay, of course the players know it, but I don't think the audience know it. He's terrible to play with sometimes because he's just so annoying, you know. Because when you make a move, he's strong. First of all, he's very strong.
Right.
So everyone has to know he's very strong. And when you make a move, he just shakes his head, you know. It's like, oh, this idiot played this move again, you know. It's like, he's very annoying to play with him because his body language is not very nice.
Yeah, he had a lot of histrionics. Wears his emotions on his sleeve.
Yeah. No, it's when he was younger, he used to be very rude, you know, also. Mm-hmm. So he was not very popular when he was younger. But then at some point, you know, he grew up and started to behave better, you know. But, I mean, you still, you know, sometimes he gets his flashbacks to the old days. Like, you have this when he played with Lev, for example, in The Candidate, you know, when he was trying to take back his move. You know?
Right.
Like, come on. It's cameras all over. I mean, what are you doing, you know? It's like, but it's just like, because Hikaru is like a street fighter, you know.
Yeah, that's
so,
a good analogy.
Basically, he grew up playing, you know, like in the parks, you know, so he sometimes still gets back to that when it's a lot on stake. And that's not very pleasant, you know, because it's very uncommon, you can say, at high level that someone throws to pieces, you know, or castles with two hands. And then, I mean, it's just, people don't do this, you know, it's just, but he does it because it's like how he started to play.
Yeah.
And I've noticed also when you play Blitz in US that I'm not saying that all people are doing it, but a lot of players actually play like that. Because it's more accepted, you know. If you do it in Europe, it's not accepted, you know. You will get warnings and you'll get, you know, punishments if you continue. Because it's just not accepted to castle with two hands, for example. I mean, you get disqualified usually. Hikaru actually managed to not get disqualified, but I think it was also because his opponent didn't claim it. But because for me, it's just not very nice way to play, you know, to throw the pieces and put them somewhere in the middle of the squares and so on. I don't find it serious, honestly. But it is more like hustling, you know, just hustling.
Yeah.
Which also could be funny, you know. I passed by Washington Park, for example, when I was now in New York. And it's funny to watch this, you know, the hustlers when they sit there and play and beat people here and there and trash talk and so on. I enjoy it, you know, to watch it.
Yeah, they've got all the tricks. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, all the tricks. You know, pawns are moving, you know, a bit fast sometimes. It's really interesting to watch it, you know.
But that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, but some of these guys, they're also good players, I think. They sit there and I think some of them, they probably master level, no?
Yeah, oh, for sure.
And it's just that they either played like 20 years ago or whatever. You know? I think it's something enriching for chess, you know, to have those guys around there playing. But I don't think it should be brought into serious competitions, you know, this way of behaving, because it's not, I mean, chess used to be a gentleman's sport, but this is everything except from gentlemen. And Hikaru has to be a bigger guy than to sit there and, you know, try to take back the moves in candidate tournament. I mean, it's not very wise either, because you know that there's cameras. I mean, what are you going to say with the camera? Right. I didn't drop the piece. Yeah, right. I mean, it's not very... you cannot win that battle, no?
Yeah.
So,
of course, Kasparov had his famous example of that against Polgar too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Gary also did it. But I think it is that those guys, you know, they want to win more than you and me.
Yeah.
So that's also something that you have to respect. I mean, it's wrong, but you have to understand why they get like this. You know, they just really hate to lose, and it's also a part of the strength. I mean, I know Magnus well, and he hates losing.
Right.
He hates losing. Maybe he's less open with it, you know, so people don't see it, than Hikaru. But he hates losing.
Of course, yeah. You don't get to be world champion.
No, you cannot become world champion if you like losing. I mean, there's no one that will become world champion by losing. So, of course, he hates it. And that's something where it's one of many differences when I look into myself, that I don't like losing, of course, but I don't hate it the same way as he does.
Yeah.
Because it's not, I don't have the same extreme, you know, personality where you hate to lose. And that's, I think, to become like one of the best players and world champion especially, you need to have that. Like Gary gets, you know, he gets, even now when he replaced one of his retirement tournaments, you know, he absolutely hates losing.
Yeah.
I remember this game he lost with Navarro in St. Louis, where he was totally winning. He played a fantastic game. And then I don't know what happened. He was like, he was rusty, you know. So he started to blunder and even lost the game in the end. And he told me he didn't sleep for I think a couple of days, you know. He couldn't sleep for a couple of days. And you have to imagine that this is you know, a top politician, you know, a big personality all over, multimillionaire, you know, that's much more business guy now than into chess. And this was just a tournament that he did for fun. And he didn't sleep for a couple of days.
Yeah. So yeah, so much for fun.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have to realize that it's like those guys still, he hates losing. He absolutely hates it. And I think that's something special that you need to have in order to get to this position. Like the only guy that I know that used to be world champion that is actually fine with losing is Topalov. Yeah, it's a bit strange, actually. He's actually fine with losing. It's a bit weird, actually, because it's like he doesn't care, basically.
Huh.
And for me, it's a bit weird, you know, because he's so strong, and he used to be world champion, and those guys, they always hate losing. He doesn't, which is interesting. But yeah, I mean, it shows that you can be different also and reach the top.
Yeah, which I guess is encouraging.
But, yeah. It well, in one way it is, you know, because
right.
Of course you don't want to have these videos with yourself, you know, standing there and jumping up and down and throwing some things and saying some things that you regret or whatever. So it's of course encouraging.
Yeah. I mean, I also feel like it's being taught better as chess becomes more professional. You know, it's sort of like in the NBA, like younger players now are better business people and better at, you know, not making stupid mistakes on social media and stuff like that than they used to be. And I think similarly in chess, like as the whole field becomes professionalized, you know, kids who have that impulse to be hyper competitive and maybe not show the best sportsmanship are hopefully having that caught at a younger age and working on it at a younger age so that they can present themselves more professionally as they start to get attention.
Yeah. And well, I mean, social media is usually as Geary that fights with some of the other players. Yeah. He likes to provoke them.
He's entertaining. I don't want that to change.
No, I know. I think all the journalists love him.
Yeah, exactly. Because
if you have nothing to write about, you can just look at Anish Twitter, and you will always find some gauntlet. You know,
never entirely sure like when he's serious and when he's not. And like,
yeah, no, I think no one knows. That's what he likes also. Because I've known Anish since he used to be a kid, because actually I brought him to Sweden because he was playing in the Sigemann tournament. So I brought him there a couple of days before the Sigemann tournament, because every year I'm organizing a dinner for some sponsors and chess lovers. Basically, we are fundraising towards the Swedish Championships. And then we have a business dinner where people are networking, having fun, and then they contribute to the prize fund for the Swedish Championships. And then I had Anish there as a guest, which was basically one of the first times that some 2,700 guys were in Sweden. It's not that often, actually. It's quite funny. Kasparov has been there a couple of times now, and also Magnus now, but it happens very rarely. I can tell you that we have 2,700 guys in Sweden. So then Anish was there, and it was before he was totally established in the world elite, because he was just a young boy. So he was like 15, I think, when he came there. And so then we spent quite a lot of time. I took him also both to the worst neighborhood, I shouldn't say the worst by far, because I like it actually, but the roughest neighborhood you can see in Sweden. And they're most exclusive on the same day. And it was quite funny for him to see the differences, how it looks like. But I know him. I know his style. I know he likes to provoke. You know, it's like he likes it, you know. He has a special humor and he likes these provocations, you know, like small provocations.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and sometimes it becomes a little bit too good, you know. I know Jobava actually wanted to beat him up one time.
I'd like to see that. I'd like to see that fight.
Yeah, it was. I mean,
I don't want anyone to get hurt, of course, but.
You have it. I think it was one interview. I think the interview was filmed. So basically, you have it. It was on broadcast.
Okay.
And yeah, probably you don't see all the events of what happened, but you can see that Jobava is not very happy with Anish. There was a little bit continuation on this also, so basically about wanted to beat him up because he took offense because Anish said something that Yubao was like always trying to attack because he's a very aggressive player, and Anish didn't rate his attack very, very highly. So then he said something sarcastic, like, yeah, here you have a fantastic attack. I'm very afraid of something like this. And Jobava was very upset. He was very angry. So basically, he wanted to take it outside. But they managed to calm him down a bit, so he didn't beat him up. But it's like... And Anish, you know, he's like a small boy. So he just continues with this kind of sarcastic jokes. And, you know, So it's quite funny, actually. But he, I think he, the journalist, they must love him. Because
yeah,
he is a lot of headlines all the time. And also, I mean, I think people are a bit unfair against him because he had a very high drawing percentage, especially before. I think it's not that bad anymore.
Yeah.
But he used to have. And then I think the people don't really take him seriously. You know, like, you see all these people saying that they can draw him. I mean, come on, give it a try. It's not that easy.
Yeah. Yeah, and he's getting stronger. I mean, I think he cracked the top 10 again, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's still 27-70 or something. Like, I mean, try to draw him. You know, it's not that.
Yeah.
And you see all these players.
Yeah, he's number five in the world.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I know.
Good luck drawing him.
This club players, and they write, I mean, it's a disgrace and whatever. Yeah. You know? I mean, try to play him by yourself.
Yeah.
We'll see if it's a draw or some other result. You know, it's not that easy. Yeah. So I think that he deserves actually a bit more respect. But it is like this. I remember with Petr Leko, it used to be the same.
Right.
That people were writing incredibly insulting things about him, you know. And I don't know, Peter also took it very badly, you know. He mentioned it to me a couple of years ago that he was upset what people wrote about him, you know. So I think it's unfair, you know. I mean, people should be nicer to watch these guys, you know. It's still, because it's easy for everyone to sit there with an engine and say that, oh, how can you miss this, you know. I mean, you wouldn't have seen it without the engine.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's been happening in this World Championship.
Yeah, yeah. You saw this win with in 30 moves that not one single player could find even with the help of the computer.
Yeah.
I still see these guys, how could you miss it?
Right. Yeah, it's insane.
They don't even know. They, even if they sit there for 10 days, they will not figure out
right.
With the help of the computer, even if they are allowed to move ahead, you know,
right.
They will not find it out. And still they sit there and say, how could he miss it? I mean, come on, you know, I didn't even understand the win.
Yeah.
And then even if Kasparov didn't understand it, you know, Magnus didn't understand, Fabi didn't understand, even to that they pointed out the moves to them.
Yeah, Vishy said he wants to spend like a day studying it.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was extremely complicated.
Yeah,
and no one got it basically.
Yeah,
and then if no one gets it, I mean, I don't think that this club player with 1800, you know, understands it better.
Yeah.
So it's like sometimes you should show more respect for the players. I mean, but it's the same in all sports, you know. If someone misses in soccer, you know, people sit there and scream. And
yeah, that's a good point.
So I think that if it's like that, it shows that there's interest, you know. And I think that there is interest in chess, but I have to be honest and say that I don't think that Aegon is doing the best job for chess. I think that it would be better if you had a company that is actually slightly more professional, you know.
Yeah.
That would organize the and transparent and professional, that would actually organize the World Championship. It would be much better for chess because their interest is there, but I just don't think that they are doing the maximum with the World Championship, you know.
Yeah, that, I mean, that, and that the interest just grows and grows, so hopefully by the next one we can do better.
Yeah, no. I mean, the World Championship matches. I think they should be. They should have huge venues, you know.
Yeah,
and people should be able to see it, you know. I mean, to enter properly, you know, and see it, you know, and not enter some time slot or whatever, you know.
Right. It
should be proper entry, you know.
Yeah, and like, I mean, the solution of listening with headphones so that you can hear commentary and see the players is not.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's how it should be. And I mean, it should be massive playing halls so everyone can enter, they can see it, you know, you can listen, you can enjoy it, you know, because this should be like a big party for the chess world.
Yeah.
And then you should have like, you know, professionality and everything. Like, you know, when you're designing the logo or whatever, your websites, and I mean, it should be better, actually. They could do more, and they should do more. I mean, or if they cannot do more, then you should change to another company that basically wants to do more. Because it's very important that this is properly done. Because it's the nicest thing we have in chess.
Yeah, agreed.
And okay, I mean, and to get back to this, like, Fischer's Passkey, you know, where everyone watches it. That's really what we want to do in chess.
That would be amazing. And speaking of which, the game is heating up. Game 8, move 21 for white as we wrap up recording. So I'll let you get to it. I don't know if you want to... Have you been checking in on this position, Pontus?
Yeah, I mean, it's more interesting today.
Sharp opens. Quite double-edged.
So this looks interesting, actually.
So we'll both hunker down and enjoy some broadcasts and relax. But thanks again for coming on. So I'll link to your website. I'll link to the nonprofit. Does Chess and Business, does it take donations as well as I know you're... Okay, so I'm doing a t-shirt sale. It's not going to be a ton of money unless loyal listeners, you guys shock me. I am going to donate a portion of the proceeds to your charity, to this initiative, because I think it's great for chess. So
That's perfect. We are very happy for that. Cool. And if there is also other people out there, you know, that wants to donate, then it's of course possible. So we are very happy to accept that, and it also helps us to be able to contribute with chess sets to we give chess sets also to the participants and participating schools and so on, so they are able to practice.
Excellent. Cool. Well, keep up the good work, Pontus. Look forward to seeing what you do both with this project and your book and everything else. And thanks for taking the time. This was super interesting, as expected.
Thanks a lot for having me, you know.
So all right.
We'll see what's next project going to be, maybe next year or whatever. So I will come back again.
Yeah, sounds good to me. Always welcome.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks to everyone who helps make Perpetual Chess possible. That includes my esteemed producer, Matthew Passy, and Geert Vandervelt for supplying the intro music, and everyone who's put in a good word for the show, whether it be on a podcast platform like Apple Podcasts or telling a friend or anything like that. As you guys know, I spend a lot of time on the show, probably about 5 hours a week between the research and the booking guests and the social media and the actual interview. I love doing it, but it can be hard to find the time. Which brings me to the financial support. I want to give special thanks to those who contribute to the show. Extra special thanks to Chessable.com for their generous support. And I also want to thank, as always, my Patreon and PayPal Perpetual partners. You are Adam Ralph of ChessEngland.com, Adam Vrancourge, Adrian Gutierrez, Alex Pejas, Ali Morchetti, Andres Quizdwa, Brian Mullis, Carl Labanz, I am Carlos Perdomo of ChessAtlanta.com, Bill Moran, Chad Hilton, Chad Oliver, Chris Balcom, Chris Flanagan, Chris Wainscott, Christopher Shabri, Chris Wood, I am Christoph Zalecki, aka Chess Explained, Coach J's Chess Academy, Dan O'Hanlon, Daniel Ginsburg, Daniel Lucas, Daniel Naylor, Daniel D. Schaefer, Daniel Vine, David Cramley, CEO of Chessable.com, Dwayne Edmonds, Ethan Smith, I am Elect Donnie Ariel, Frank Tortoris, Gary Andrews, Gary Lewis, Geert Vandervelt, I am Greg Shahadi, Harish Srinivasan, GM Jakob Augard of Quality Chess Publishing, James Bonastia, Jason Woolham, Jennifer Valens of OffTheRook.com, Jeffrey Martello, John Fernandez, John Hartman, John Jernigan, WGM Jen Shahadi, Jens Green, Jerry Wells, John Thompson, Johnny McMenamin, WGM Katerina Nemsova, Kelly Palmer, I am Kostya Kovyutsky, Krishna Gopala Krishnan, Laura Belyavsky, Leo Delgado, Lorraine Dore, Lucio Casada Silva, Matthew Passy, Macaulay Peterson, Martin Habish, Matthew Tedesco, Nate Salen, Nathan Webster, GM Pascal Charbonneau, Passy Passanen, Paul Swaney, Paulo Santana, Peter Lux, Peter Merrifield, Randy Temple, Ricky Grijalva, Rob Lazorchek, Robert Steiner, Ryan Berg, Ryan Sohn, Steiner Lima, Stuart Katz, WGM Tatia of Abrahamian, Thomas Stanix, Thomas Tchenko, Tim Brennan, Tim Seymour, Timothy Ha, Todd Bryant, Tony Rotella, Tyron Price, Victor Vrancourge, Zhao Cheng, and Zhivko Stoyanov. Thanks a lot, everyone. Catch you guys next week.
Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.